I want to thank you all for being on the call or listening to the taping of this and sharing your feedback. It will all be considered as we move through this process, which will be the definitive answer in how we use science as we look at the impact of trauma on children to ensure children are served in their best interest. Why are we doing this? As you know, over the last year, the program has spent a lot of time analyzing and discussing the issue of how to best advocate for children from the Constitutional Revision Commission's Proposal 40 to have client-directed attorneys for every child in dependency court to the more recent proposal by the Special Committee of the Florida Bar to provide every dependent child an attorney by 2020. This has been going on for more than 20 years, and each and every time the policymakers of the state have supported the guardian ad litem best interest model of representation. In that process, I reached out to those who are in court every day and those who work with children. You all saw the exchange I had with GALs throughout the state about the future of child advocacy. This feedback led us to this committee and some of the comments that we got, and there were a lot of comments from hundreds and hundreds of volunteers and staff and advocates. One, that the current system is working, that most children lack capacity, that a guardian ad litem is better able to establish trust and gather information because of the time they spend with the child, the concern that appointment of additional attorneys would lengthen proceedings or make them more cumbersome, also the concern that attorney ad litems sometimes had to advocate for things that were not in the best interest. One of the goals of this is to include those that are the experts, and that is the people that do this every day in court and get feedback as we look at the science and educate ourselves. I think it's time we examine the science behind where this discussion has led us, and this introduction call is the first step. We established this I Am for the Child Committee on Trauma-Informed Advocacy to study the latest science as it impacts all aspects of dependency court, principally the trauma to the child, children's unique developmental needs, and the need to provide independent information to a judge who has responsibility to make decisions which are in the child's best interest. We're going to look at it from the eyes of the child in dependency and what is in their best interest, and identify practices that minimize harm in the process. The committee also will focus on how the guardian ad litem program and staff meets these needs, or if there are deficiencies in the provision of such services. Such issues as capacity, and how is a judge to have as much information as possible so they can make good decisions for children. A report will be compiled gathering the most reliable and relevant research, and recommendations will be made as needed to improve our advocacy by revising our practices, our training, our standards, and as well as proposing legislation to further the best interest of children. Throughout the process, the conference calls will be open for all staff and volunteers to listen and learn. I'm excited about this project and think we can learn a lot to better serve children. We will continuously collect your views as presentations are made and how it impacts child advocacy. The goal, we will examine the latest science on trauma and child development to better understand how these factors impact the way advocates interact with abused and neglected children, their capacity, and the need for normalcy to get better outcomes for children. The group will make recommendations for legislation, best practices, training, and operational procedures to ensure children are given a voice in life-changing court proceedings while still allowing them to be children and having their rights and interests protected and furthered. Thank you. Deborah, it's yours.
Thanks, Alan. I appreciate it. And I just wanted to say thank you to Alan for opening this up, because the more that I learn about what the science is telling us, the more I think there is to learn. And I'm just really excited that we have this opportunity to do something formalized within the guardian ad litem program that could really make such a big difference. So thank you for that. As we move through the agenda, Alan asked that he sort of give us our initial charge, and then I spend a few minutes outlining some of the work group goals. And he talked about a number of them in his discussion of his vision of how the work group would proceed. So we're gonna try and examine the science. We're going to look at what is out there generally about trauma and about development, and then try and take those bigger principles and continue to narrow the information that we receive so that we can specifically apply it to the things that we're doing each day, the way that Guardians Ad Litem are approaching children with information, understanding the behaviors that they see, not only for the child, but the child's family. We are going to talk about the establishment of resiliency for children who have been traumatized, and how Guardians Ad Litem, who have been heralded as the one stable person in the child's life, can really use what we know about trauma to make that role something that changes the trajectory of how a child might recover. There's so much out there that it can be a little bit overwhelming, which leads us to, it gets us to segue to the next part of the agenda, which is the people that we've selected for this group. As Alan said, we had so many great responses when he initially sent his email out, and there were some people who indicated that they had a particular experience or they were a professional that worked with traumatized children specifically. And so the people that were selected for the committee, and, of course, we could only choose a small amount, otherwise that the committee would be too big to be manageable. We feel like we have compiled a group of people that will not only be able to offer the perspectives of all the stakeholders within Guardian Ad Litem, but also an outside perspective of maybe some work they've done as a mental health professional, for example. So we really want to be sure that everyone feels like they can speak up when they hear something that they want to add to and, can offer a new idea and think out of the box. We are also, and I guess I should have said this a moment ago, we've also done some work at the state office reaching out to state and national experts on these topics to see, again, how do we understand what science is available generally, and then how can we find people that can help us with dependent children specifically, and then if we're able, even more specifically, in the role of an advocate for those children. So we've reached out to Casey Family Foundation. We're fortunate to have Lee Merritt on the call and on the group who has worked with this issue in the court system. We've also reached out to the Department of Children and Families, and we're exchanging information and trying to get to what will be most relevant to the operation of Guardian Ad Litem and our understanding of how to best advocate for children. So the reason that I say that is a segue to our next item on the agenda is I would really like for everyone on the team to understand the rich resources that are available to us as we undertake this initiative. We have some people on this call who are recognized experts who have decades of experience, in not only advocacy for children, but in the related fields. And so, to give a very mundane example, I don't want to be talking about all kinds of things that happen in the Fifth Circuit when Marsha Hilty, who is the director in the Fifth Circuit, has the expertise and can share that. So I would love it if we could I'm going to call everyone's name, and if you wouldn't mind just spending 1 to 2 minutes, we've allotted 20 minutes on the agenda, to kind of tell us about yourself. Maybe get a few thoughts on what you see happening around the issue of trauma, possible paths you see for the work group going forward, or anything that you're hearing that's unexpected, or maybe you see some things that are missing. So
before we start, can I add one last thing, Deborah, before you you know, we have a lot of people listening. I want you to understand you're not being excluded. We're just getting your information alternatively through emails. And in fact, when we post this online, and so all our volunteers and staff can look at it, we are going to consider all the emails and thoughts that will help guide us. So we had to choose a work group, as Deborah said, because it would be just too unmanageable. So we chose some people based on some earlier comments and responses they had made. So back to you, Deborah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that addition. Thank you. Okay, so actually, Alan, while you're still on there, do you want to just kind of talk, for those of you who don't know Alan's very long history with child welfare, can you kind of tell people a little bit about your background, and then maybe I'll do that because I think there's probably a lot of people that I don't know personally, and then we'll go through the book, go through the list.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. First of all, I was a guardian ad litem in 1986 when I was in law school at Florida State, and just really knew that I made a difference in the kids' lives that that I was assigned to, and really was a big believer in the program. Through the years, I've had a number of roles in being an attorney. I've been a prosecutor where I've had to prosecute children, especially children charged as adults. I've been a public defender where I represented children charged with delinquent offenses. I've represented children as an attorney ad litem. I was an attorney for the Department of Juvenile Justice for 5 years. And I was chief legal counsel for Department of Children and Families for Central Florida, where we had responsibility of, now it's called Children's Legal Services. At the time, it was Child Welfare Legal Services. And then I became the state director for the Department of Children and Families. I've been the chair of Legal Needs of Children. I've been the chair for the Florida Bar. I've been the chair of the Juvenile Rules Committee for the Florida Bar. In 2010, I became the state director for the Guardian Ad Litem program, and I've usually had a child that I've advocated for as a volunteer, even though I'm the executive director and I have one now. I've argued in front of the Florida Supreme Court on children's issues for the Rules Committee before, and have done an appeal or two. And that's pretty much my background. Deborah?
Yes, okay. I just wasn't sure you were finished. Thank you. As I think there's an expression, I think Alan will forget more about child welfare issues than most people will ever know in their whole lifetime. So I just wanted everyone on the committee who doesn't know you personally to understand the breadth of your knowledge as executive director. So I'm Deborah Lacombe, and I'm going to sort of be the coordinator, the collector of all information, and hopefully the person who does most of the heavy lifting for the people on the committee and the ideas that you all want to pursue. I'm a senior attorney, and I initially began my career at the Office of the State Courts Administrator while Guardian Ad Litem was part of the judicial branch. So I worked on the transition of the program out of the branch and was with the first state office for 3 or 4 years. I left to go to private practice and then came back to work with Alan and with Dennis about 3 years ago. And my responsibilities now include the legislative work that's done and then policy issues like this that Alan asks me to work on. So and if people don't mind me just sort of calling you out in any order, If Dr. Van Hook is still on the phone, I would love it if she could give us a minute or two of her background.
Oh, thank you. I spent much of my life as a clinical social worker in various communities with children, with older adults, and then I started teaching social work at the University of Michigan and at the University of Central Florida. And when I retired, I returned to my social work roots and became a guardian ad litem. And I've been really involved looking at trauma, not only in a clinical perspective, but putting some writing in that area. So I appreciate being asked to be part of this.
Thank you, Dr. Van Hook. I appreciate that. We feel very lucky to have you, and the people in your circuit spoke very highly of you, so thank you for agreeing to join us.
Oh, thank you.
Marcia Hilty, can I ask you to give us the same little bit of background and some things that you've been thinking about as we've come through this initiative?
Sure. Well, to the doctor, I went to the other school in Michigan, the Green School, and graduated with a master's in clinical social work, and then I graduated from the Washington School of Psychiatry in Washington, D.C., postgraduate work in child and adolescent psychotherapy. I've been a clinician for children and adults, and I also was an administrator overseeing both inpatient psychiatry, outpatient psychiatry, and residential treatment. I've been the circuit director for 18 years, both in the Second Circuit and the Fifth Circuit. I'm very excited about this opportunity because I am always concerned about services, that we have qualified clinicians working with our children, that we have appropriate level of care, that we're working properly with parents, and that we're assessing the value of psychotropic meds making sure that we have the right services on board for all of our kids.
Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Can I call on John Garavickis if you are with us?
Yes. I'm from Massachusetts. I graduated from the University of Massachusetts with a degree in psychology. I worked up there in adult mental health for a lot of years, inpatient and outpatient, and then I moved to Florida in 1997. I've worked in various capacities in mental health with both adults and children. From 2003 to 2009, I was at the DCF office locally here in Fort Myers in the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Program as the Children's Mental Health Specialist, where we dealt with all the local providers, the community, and the funding of such programs. We conducted all the residential staffings for children as far as level of care. I came here about 2 years and 8 months ago, and I am a guardian ad litem, child advocacy manager. And just trying to continue to collaborate with all our community partners and getting our kids the proper outcomes.
Excellent. Thank you, John. Eric Emery, would you mind filling next?
Sure. My name is Eric Emery. I got my undergraduate and my master's degree from Florida State in criminology and criminal justice, focusing on juvenile delinquents and recidivism rates. I then became a child protective investigator down in Brevard County, and then I decided to go to law school. After graduating law school, went to work for Children's Legal Services for 5 years in the Seventh Circuit, was a supervising attorney there, and now I work for the Guardian Ad Litem program in the Second Circuit in Tallahassee, Florida. I've been here for a year. I'm the supervising attorney here, and was lucky enough to just recently go to the ECC Cross Sites 0-3 conference in North Carolina, which was heavily focused on trauma for our dependent children, and just happy to be part of the work group.
That's excellent. Thank you, Eric. I'll definitely have to pick your brain about that conference. That sounds really interesting. Can we jump to Eva Sugg?
Hi, everyone. I feel like I'm a baby or a novice to the dependency system and to this facet now that I'm hearing everyone else's introductions. But I'm a senior attorney in St. Lucie County, which is in the 19th Circuit. I started working private adoptions while I was in law school at a nonprofit, decided I wanted to stick working with kids. Subsequent to graduating law school, I did private practice just by virtue of the job market for about a year and a half until I was able to get in with our program, and I've been with our program just under 5 years now. I try and wrap being trauma-informed into everything I do with litigation and advocating for our children and then the family as a whole. I often find we are leaving trauma-minded or being trauma-minded out of our litigation process, which is a disservice to the family unit, which ultimately is a disservice to our kids. So I really wrote being trauma-informed into every aspect of our litigation, which involves a lot of collaborating with everyone involved in the system and the service providers in particular.
Thank you for that, Eva. So now we have a five-way tie for my favorite person on the work group, because I think you guys are all already so insightful and wonderful. And for the record, all of you came with very high, recommendations and everything from the folks that work with you. So we are excited to have been able to pull this group together. And Eva, you are no exception, even if you do think you're the baby of the group. So thank you for that. Dr. Gillen, do you mind being our next person introduced?
Sure. I'm Marty Gillen. I am a faculty member in Family, Youth, and Community Sciences at the University of Florida. I'm also a faculty affiliate of the Institute for Child Welfare at FSU. And I'm a trust-based relational intervention TBRI practitioner, which is training out of Texas Christian University. And my area of expertise is trauma-informed care. And I travel the states and then nationally working with foster and adoptive parents, biological parents, all on TBRI and how to help kids through trauma and parenting approaches. I also do trauma-informed classroom trainings with school systems, both private and public schools. And then personally, we have been foster parents for 4 years. We've adopted two children out of the foster care system, and then I'm a guardian ad litem here as well.
Thank you, Dr. Gillen. We are excited to have you. Okay, is Marissa Elordi on?
I am.
Could you go next?
Sure. I definitely am the baby. I am a third-year law student. I went straight from undergrad to law school, so I'm pretty young. I haven't had a career yet. But I am currently working with Mr. Abramowitz on a note for the Journal of Law and Public Policy that talks about why the unlimited right to an attorney for children is potentially harmful to them and has a lot of serious repercussions that haven't been addressed by either the Constitutional Revision Commission or the Special Committee. So I'm excited to get to learn more from everybody here.
Well, and we will definitely appreciate coming to learn about some of the things that you have discovered in your academic research, because I think a lot of the understanding of this issue has been influenced by the writings about the way we're dealing with children historically. And I'm not exactly sure that what's available and what's been published has really caught up yet with a lot of the practices that the people on this work group think serve children best. So that will be an important contribution, and I appreciate you being on the call.
Thanks for having me.
How about Lee Turco?
Hello. Thank you again for having me a part of this committee. I was a CPI with DCF for a year, and then I had a baby, so I left, and I started with the program back in 2011, and I've been a CAM since, and I love working with children. I love fighting for the kids, and I'm very, very excited to be a part of this because understanding the trauma that these children go through and the help that they need so quickly and the delay that I see with getting them the services and getting, you know, sticking with one therapist, which never happens, and understanding anything that we can do to help to, you know, prevent the long-term trauma that they have.
Perfect. Thank you, Lee. We appreciate you joining us, especially I know you had a little bit of late notice, so thank you for being able to make yourself available. Coravius, do you mind going next? Okay, perhaps we have lost him on the call, so I will come back to him if we're able to. Cookie Mooney?
Hey, good morning. My educational background is in social work, and I've been with the Guardian Ad Litem program for approximately 27 years. I'm the circuit director in Circuit 10. I spent between 7 and 8 years directing the family law division with Guardian Ad Litem as part of that 27 years. And the main issue that we dealt with in the family law division in these custody battles, the cases that we would take in our organization were the most complicated and those involving extreme trauma to the children who were being split apart due to the divorce, the custody battle. And there was, we got involved a lot in the trauma that our kids were going through by being asked to make a decision about which parent do you want to be with, which parent do you want to live with, and the trauma of being put through testifying and the pain of those private and difficult experiences being put on public display and the amount of dissension that was caused between family members with their children just by all of this being thrown out there in a public arena. So children enduring trauma through our court process has always been something that's been very important to me and is on my mind at every turn as we take these children through this difficult process to bring permanency to them. And so I feel a great burden about this issue, and I feel honored to be with this group trying to help make a difference.
Well, we feel lucky to have you, Cookie. Thank you. And, I think just, again, to the group to kind of understand who we have and why people have been, you know, placed on the committee or asked to help us, sometimes we all look so closely at dependency that we forget that a lot of these issues are being decided and addressed in other divisions of court in a very different way. Whether it is in domestic relations court or whether it's in delinquency court. And, you know, there are things to be learned about how those processes came to be that might inform some of the things that we recommend with regard to dependency. So thank you, Cookie. I'm sure that your experience in the family court will be very valuable to the committee.
Thank you.
Coravius, I am going to come back to you. I hope we'll be able to hear you. I'll give you a second. Okay, I'm going to ask Kelly, will you reach out to Coravius and see if there was a mix-up with the participant code, and maybe we could make sure that we're able to hear him while we're still in presentation mode. And I will ask Taylor Christie. I don't think Taylor Christie's on the call, but I just wanted to try again with Taylor. Lee Merritt?
Hi, Deborah.
Hey.
How are you? Hey. Hello, everyone. I'm Lee Merritt, and I'm in Tallahassee. my adventure with Guardian Ad Litem began in 2000, so I've been kind of familiar with this for a while as a volunteer. And then I also worked for the program in the Second Circuit for 10 years, and now I'm back as a volunteer again. Now I work for the Court Improvement Program or Office of Court Improvement within Office of State Courts Administrator, kind of where we started, actually. That's where we were when I first began as a guardian back in 2000 with Marcia. And, when I think about being a guardian, honestly, I feel like we were trauma-informed really before trauma-informed was cool. And that's sort of how I look at it because in the work that I'm doing now, we've infused being trauma-responsive and trauma-informed in all the work that we do with the judges and the stakeholders with our work here at OSCA. And so when I'm looking at the work that we're doing, I'm thinking about being a GAL and how GAL is involved with this, and it's a huge part of what we do. So I'm really happy that you reached out to me, Deborah, to see about this being on this work group, because I really do feel like I can help to make a difference and help to just participate in the work that you're doing in this way through my organization and where I work now, but also just being a guardian too. So I do work here at Court Improvement. Like I said, I've been here about 5 or 6 years. And one of the things that I work on is our Trauma Responsive Courts Initiative. I also do a lot of work with early childhood courts. And so this is sort of something we talk about every day. Like I said, our trauma, being trauma-informed is infused into the work that we do with the courts around the state. I've done I've been to several conferences and workshops, et cetera, on trauma. And childhood trauma specifically, and we've developed a curriculum here. It's called the Trauma Responsive Courts Curriculum, that's held within something called a Trauma and Child Development Toolkit, that's been developed by our office, and this is all online, of course, and available for use. So I've been involved in the development of that. I do some teaching of vicarious trauma and compassion fatigue as it relates to self-care. So I've done some workshops on that. And also another thing that I've done that's helped me a lot to understand more about trauma is being involved in the trauma audits done by the National Council for Juvenile and Family Court Judges. And they do them around the U.S., but we've had several done here in Florida, and I've been a part of 3 or 4 of those. And it's a 2 or 3 day event where they come and they do a huge assessment of the courts to see how trauma-informed and trauma-responsive they are. And then they provide these recommendations back to the court. So that's been really helpful for me in my work. So I guess, when you ask the question to prepare us about how it impacts, my work with children, and I immediately go to my work as a guardian, I think it really, being trauma-informed and trauma-responsive more in my work will assist me in, the interaction with the kids. And I want to look at that as there are different age groups, for the young children versus the older children, et cetera, because it's different, of course, with them and what they're experiencing based on their developmental stage. And then my interaction with the foster parents and caregivers is something that's been on my mind quite a bit, because I'm not sure they really quite understand trauma and how it affects the kids. Just not quite sure where their understanding is. And then, of course, my advocacy in court, with the judges and how to assist them in making those decisions through a trauma lens. And then my advocacy, of course, with the community-based care, the case management, children's legal services and parents' attorneys, and sort of how my interaction and advocacy how I'll go forward with that using a trauma lens as a guardian. So I appreciate being asked to help with this, and I'm happy to do so. So thank you.
Thank you, Lee. That's wonderful. And Lee, I think Lee provides the perfect example, and I think a couple of other people on the work group have as well. Just demonstrating the variety of resources that are out there, that we will be able to, look at certain things that have already been developed and maybe either use them whole cloth if we're permitted or somehow adjust them to help what we're doing with Guardian Ad Litem. Coravius, I apologize that you had to hang up and dial back in. Should we try this one more time?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. I'm sorry about that inconvenience.
So I went to undergrad in Georgia at Albany State University with a major in political science. And then I went to law school at Florida Coastal in Jacksonville. Graduated 2011. I have been in the Orange County GAO program since 2012. And in that time, I focused on children with mental health issues for the first 3 years, and then children with developmental disabilities for the next 3.5. I'm now the litigation director for the GAO program here. During my time as mental health attorney, I attended about 90% of our multidisciplinary team staffings for all of our kids with mental health issues who we were considering either for placement in a higher level of care, whether that was a therapeutic group home or a residential treatment facility. So I've reviewed a lot of suitability assessments, talked to a lot of assessors. We've had to have kids removed from residential treatment due to them being illegally placed because they didn't go through the proper procedure to place them in there. That about wraps it up.
Well, thank you, Caravius. We're very grateful to have the perspective of folks who have done representation of children who have a variety of, you know, that come to you from a variety of different places on the spectrum, whether it's the developmental disabilities or the pervasive mental health problems. And also, we'll be glad to hear how you and Bethany Barber do maybe things a little bit differently or have a different perspective than we might at the state office. Because for those of you that don't know, Caravius and Bethany are from the Legal Aid Society of the Orange County Bar Association, and they use attorneys to represent the children for best interest advocacy. So it is a little bit of a nuance, a different nuance from exactly the way we approach it. But Caravius and Bethany, I guess you're together. Bethany, do you want to expand on that and introduce yourself for us and correct anything I may have gotten wrong?
Well, you got nothing wrong. I will say that I'll make my introduction short because it's far less illustrious than everyone else's. I'm Bethany Barber. I'm the Orange County Legal Aid Society staff attorney and guardian ad litem program director. I did my undergrad and my law degree at the University of Florida. My first introduction to the world of dependency was there. I participated in the Gator Teen Child Clinic, which just absolutely completely sucked me in, dependency and delinquency representation in Alachua County for crossover kids. I then went and I spent 2 years as an assistant attorney general in Broward County, did paternity, child support, custody, heavy elements of dependency work with that. And then at the Legal Aid Society for the past 10 years. For 5 of the past 10 years, I've been the guardian ad litem program director. I'm also involved in administration here. My role is largely administrative, which is basically helping Legal Aid Society determine what our practice areas are outside of dependency work, making sure that our board and community understand that dependency work and community, as in the volunteer attorneys and non-attorneys who work our cases, 99% are attorneys. I assist with legislative drafting, and then I head up our guardian ad litem department. This is a particularly intriguing group for us because the Legal Aid Society, we do address all the legal issues of kids and families with the exception of criminal defense. And so from our perspective, when we're in delinquency court or whatever court we're in, particularly dependency court, we know that we have to address the systemic issues that our kids face now, and we have to do it fully because if we don't, these issues are just going to mushroom, and we will see them come back through the door in a victimized capacity. So like Cookie said, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that our representation is effective. It has to mean something, so we're all hands on deck. While our approach is slightly different with the volunteer attorney GAL model, we are fully GAL and here to help. So thanks for letting us be a part of it.
Well, we're grateful to you, Bethany, and I think that's an important point that I had not considered, even though, you know, I had thought from the inception that it'd be very important to have involvement from your group, but you will be much more in tune to the way the failure to address issues in dependency comes back around in delinquency, since you're representing the kids in both of those arenas. So that will be a very important perspective, and we're grateful to both you and Caravius for giving us your time. Natalie Freitas, are you with us? Do you mind going next?
Hi. Yes, I do not mind going next. Happy to. So I am an attorney with the Guardian Item Program. I'm a senior children's best interest attorney down in the 11th Circuit, so it's Miami-Dade County. I do all of the cases where the child is a victim or suspected victim of human trafficking. Miami-Dade County has, I believe, the first human trafficking court, so our judge hears all of the cases in dependency from Miami-Dade County with a human trafficking aspect. She also hears the companion delinquency portion of the child's case. And we are a trauma-informed court, or do our best to try to be. I think can always improve. I've been with, specifically in that courtroom, it's existed since 2015, officially since 2016, and I've been there since 2016 as the CBI attorney. Let's see, what else? We do a lot of, I was mentioned earlier, MDT staffings, suitability assessments. We have a lot of those. We staff almost every day for our children together with the therapists who are trauma-informed therapists, because HT victims have complex trauma. So not only have they been already traumatized because of the possibly dependency matters that brought the case in addition, about half of them, I'd say, are recruited or become human trafficking victims while in dependency. So you have that additional trauma from being trafficked. And I'm very honored to be a part of this work group, and I am so glad that the Guardian program is taking initiative to really look at this and provide feedback on how we can better serve our children who are traumatized. I've seen the difference before coming into dependency, into the human trafficking court. I practiced for about 2 years in just regular dependency court. So I've seen the difference of when a court is trauma-informed and when it is not. And I do believe that it makes an incredible difference in advocating for the child, in the child's improvement, in the child's, and I say child, but we mostly have teenagers, 12 to 19-year-olds. And having a judge, an attorney, parent attorneys, as well as the clerk staff, the clerks trained in trauma, definitely provides a better advocacy and better support system for our dependency children. So thank you,
Natalie. Thank you for that. I think that having your view of the way that you see the differences, and also another dimension of trauma that a lot of people don't understand all the aspects of, will be really valuable to the group. And Natalie is one of several people on the work group representing the more urban areas. I just wanted to sort of let everyone know that we attempted to design the work group so that we would have people from urban areas as well as rural areas, from the northern part of Florida and South Florida. We have almost an equal number of child advocacy managers, as we have best interest attorneys, as we have volunteers. We have two circuit directors. So we tried to make sure that we could get all the stakeholders on. And I know we went a little beyond 20 minutes here, but I think it's really important for this group to work as a team. It's such an important issue. We need to know the resources at our disposal and who we can pop off a question to, in terms of exploring different ideas and coming up with strategies to make ourselves better and to educate ourselves in a way that will really be meaningful for the work that everyone is doing every day. So I appreciate everyone sharing the way that you did, and I just have great respect for all of the work and experience that you guys have and just want to thank you again. So if you don't mind, what I will do is hurry us along a bit and bring us all to the proposed work plan that you received in email. And while you're sort of reorienting yourself to what you have been given, I just want to explain to you that this was something that Alan and I initially developed so that we could try and make sure that everyone on the work group shared a common understanding of all the different impacts of trauma and what the latest science is telling us. You know, everyone on the work group is very busy and, you know, may or may not be reading, you know, information that cuts across multiple divisions of court or impact, you know, maybe we know quite a bit about children 0 to 5, but not quite as much as what the science is telling us for teens like the one Natalie serves. So what we were saying, this is a draft for everyone to consider. And I'd like to try and spend a few minutes talking about it. If someone, you know, if we have a couple people, I hope who feel comfortable just giving an overall reaction to it. But essentially, what this presents to you is a plan in which we will have about half a dozen educational conference calls. Maybe if it's possible and the group agrees, maybe set a time once a month where we can block off 2 hours, be provided information for about 90 minutes of that time, and then have about 30 minutes of discussion and questions of the presenter. And the idea would be that we would choose topics, possibly the ones that have been listed here, or others if you all have different recommendations, that we think would be most impactful for understanding, you know, the way guardian ad litem can implement the science on trauma. So I think everyone's probably reviewed this. So if you don't mind, I just want to open it up for 5 or 10 minutes and see what people think about this construct, whether something big is missing, whether it should be reordered in any way, or whether there's a specific aspect of a particular topic that I should make a note of to make sure we don't skip. So my procedure will be I'll give you guys like about 30 seconds, and then I'll just randomly start calling names out.
I would like to add, this is Alan, that, you know, nothing's written in stone, especially the time frames. If we need to go longer, this is the first type of work group that's ever taken this perspective on representation. You know, most times you hear a perception that that has come up is people with an agenda and backing into how to get to their agenda. This is more open-ended with a focus of whatever we do, it's got to be in the best interest of children. So, you know, there may be topics you want to discuss that you've heard about, and we can do it. There's also going to be times that we just send reading material out so you can see things that we're reading that deals with it that's going to impact the report so you can give comment on that. And I think that this group, which is an amazing group, has the information needed and the ideas needed to get us to where we want to be, because I think the final report, which will be written in the end and people will be able to comment on until it's finalized, will be the definitive answer in trauma-informed advocacy.
Thank you, Alan. Other people, just go ahead and just react. You won't be stuck with it.
Hey, Deborah, Eva.
Go ahead, Eva.
When reviewing the agenda, one thing that I would like to incorporate is maybe an educational component on how we intend on utilizing what we are learning and focusing on to educate others we are working with. That's a huge component I think is missing particularly in what I'm dealing with in the 19th, is a lack of understanding from service providers, foster parents, non-relative parents, other attorneys in particular. So how can we incorporate sharing what we are learning with others to best benefit our children?
That's a great suggestion. Thank you, Eva. And I heard one of the gentlemen start speaking right before that.
Yeah, this is Eric Emery from the second. Looking at the proposed work plan, just one of the things that I thought may be good towards the end was how we're actually going to put this into practice logistically. I think one of the biggest things we have, at least as an attorney, in trying to advocate these things for the kids to the court, is relaying the information and making sure that everyone is talking to each other, because the trauma that a child may disclose, or the behaviors to a foster parent or a therapist or the child's teacher or daycare provider, isn't necessarily getting to the attorney, therefore can't recommend the services to the court. So somewhere figuring out the logistics of actually coming together at a table so that we can advocate what needs to be advocated for.
Okay, that makes sense to me. If I'm understanding you correctly, sort of a mechanism like an operational way to facilitate information sharing as it relates to trauma.
Exactly. That's why I figure it'd probably be better towards the end to figure out how we're going to put it into practice.
Perfect. That's a great idea. I heard someone else. Keep going. This is great.
This is John Jervikis down in Fort Myers. I'm looking on the week of 12-3 trauma and dependency court, specifically what elements of dependency court exacerbate trauma. In addition to being a CAM here, I'm also a staff advocate. So I'm on a lot of cases, and they tend to be cases that fit my background, so a lot of mental health issues and things of that nature, and I think that we'll have a lot of input as far as what's happening in court day to day with our cases and, you know, what we're running into and where we see it affect the children most negatively.
Hi, this is Natalie, and kind of to piggyback off of that last comment, I would request that we discuss not just specifically what elements of dependency court. When I think of court, I think of literally being in court, the hearing. But if we could take a more broader approach, what elements of being a part of the dependency system, so from shelter to the closure of the case, if we could take a more broader approach of how being a part of that exacerbates the trauma.
Excellent point. I am making note of all of it. Who else? Well, this is a lot of really great feedback, and this is exactly the kind of thing that I was hoping that people would have a few minutes to look at this. In the future, I will be sure to give you more than, you know, these materials were pretty straightforward, could be glanced at, but in the future when you're provided materials that we're going to talk about, you will have, you know, far more time to digest. What I'd ask of everyone is, if other ideas come to you about what we have laid out here for the work plan, if you would email me, I can take your comments that way. And that will, you know, and then we can leave this fluid. As Alan said, nothing is set in stone. If we have a particular presenter who raises questions that we feel like we want the answers to, we've built in some time to bump back. We can move things around. So we will follow the topic to its logical conclusion. And as long as what we do at the end can be implemented in a way that makes outcomes and advocacy for children better, then we will consider it a success. So as we're wrapping up, we're getting close to 1 o'clock, and I'm going to do my very best to always be respectful of your time and as efficient as possible. So we'll move to logistics and wrap up. Pardon me, I'm going to hit pause on there. I will send a follow-up email just reiterating what I just said in terms of soliciting feedback on the work plan. under tab 3B, under item 3B, we asked the question, what else, is there anything that the group feels like they might want to know about the Guardian Ad Litem program, our operations, our policies, that would help them to apply this information that's coming in? So I feel like people are probably pretty familiar with the standards. Maybe most of you are aware of the I Am for the Child Academy, which is our platform for training. You know, people basically, I think, understand what a day-to-day interaction might look like, the difference between a staff advocate and a person who does volunteer coordination exclusively. If I'm wrong about that, and there's something that people feel like, oh, I haven't read the standards in a long time, and didn't we used to have attorney standards? Whatever question you have, if there's something about the way the program operates that you feel like you would like to know personally or the group should be instructed on, let me know that. So I will send an email with that question as well. As for logistics and wrap up, what Alan and I had initially discussed, of course, we're going to record all these calls so that anybody who has a conflict will be able to catch up. After every call, I'll send a summary with any kind of follow-up questions like I just described. You are all very busy people. What we had initially thought was that we would choose a one day a month where we schedule the calls and everyone can count on, for example, you know, that it would be the third Thursday of the month at lunch. I would like for you to do, and again, I'll get you this in email, but if you wouldn't mind looking at your calendars, and if you have part of your schedule where you know you are routinely unavailable, you know, if your trial week is always the third week of the month, shoot us an email like that. And then after we collect that information, we'll probably send you one of those doodle polls again and say, you know, is the second Tuesday at 4 generally good for you? Is the third Thursday at noon generally good for you? And we will do what we can to accommodate the majority. I think, does that sound good to everybody? Does anybody have a question about that on scheduling? You don't have to give me feedback now, but given the complexity of some of the topics that we were going to cover, we were thinking that maybe a two-hour block would be necessary. Again, we'll be very respectful of your time, and if we don't need that long, we won't take it. But if anybody thinks that's just too long to accomplish, please let me know in the email. And then going forward, what we're anticipating is, as Alan said, maybe providing some sort of background material prior to a scheduled call. We'll try to have learning objectives for the call, and we will probably try when we can to either get CLE or CEUs. Because we're hoping to have, you know, professionals in the field really be providing an education. And since these calls will be open to a much bigger audience, I think it was Natalie and there was another person on the call who said, I think it was Eric, you know, we've got to get this information out to people. So if we're having a general call on trust relational trust-based interventional relationships. Do I have that right? Correct me?
Trust-based relational intervention.
Thank you. Okay, I apologize. I'm tongue-tied 64 minutes in. I apologize. So, for example, if we're learning about that, you know, that would be a fantastic opportunity for everyone in the program to listen and learn. So if we can do that, we'll do that. The thing that I would like for everyone to think about as well is if we're going to do this over a period of months, we want to make sure that we have an efficient way to capture the thoughts and ideas and questions that we have. I've developed a template that I'll send to you for everyone to just sort of look at and think about whether or not it would be useful to them in terms of collecting their own ideas and thoughts on the substantive topics that we cover so that when it's time to make recommendations, we don't lose the information. If anyone has experience doing this a different way, I'd love to hear about it. So think creatively about that. And lastly, if there are any topics on the work plan that you see and you know of a great presenter, we're still in the process of selecting presenters for the topics. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that contact information with me, that would be a giant help. So that, I think, gets us through the agenda. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Okay, I feel pretty good about us only going 6 minutes over because this is our first call, so that is very good news. If you think of something afterward, feel free to contact me. And as I said, I'll send a follow-up email and just let me know if there's anything that we can do. We appreciate your time, and we are very excited for this initiative, so thank you again.